Last Wednesday, we lost a true man of God. Reverend Billy Graham passed away. Most of my life, I followed Billy Graham and his teachings. I marveled at how he conducted his life, humble and free from scandal. As a young man, I gained strength in my own religious feelings from the comforting words of this great man. Billy Graham told a young boy from Wilson that God loved me, and that message stuck with me. Heaven gained a powerful voice of faith last Wednesday as Billy Graham joined his beloved wife, Ruth, who preceded him in death. Sadly, we lost a man whose powerful voice touched the lives of millions across the world. Billy Graham was not a hypocrite. He lived what he preached, and he will be missed by a world that needs his message more today than ever before. The Parkland, Florida school shootings opened an avalanche of liberals who see the Second Amendment as something that must be eliminated. First of all, there are more guns in America than people. If the Second Amendment was removed from the Constitution and the public was not allowed to bear arms, what do we do about the guns in homes all across the country? Does government confiscate those guns? And if so, who thinks there will be no deadly shootings before we surrender the only real protection we have against those who would harm us? Now, I'm convinced that liberalism is a mental disorder. How else do we explain how a human being thinks that declaring an area a gun-free zone will serve any purpose except to alert criminals that the area is unarmed? 98% of all mass shootings have occurred in gun-free zones. 98%. Clearly, the shooters do not pay attention to the liberals' fantasy land. Other liberals, like Hollywood actor Martin Sheen, Charlie Sheen's father, have declared areas as nuclear-free zones. Sheen was the honorary mayor of Malibu, California, and he declared Malibu a nuclear-free zone. Like anybody with a nuclear bomb is going to be deterred by Sheen's declaration. By the way, Martin Sheen also declared Malibu a sanctuary area for the homeless. When those homeless people began to pour into Malibu, the hypocritical homeowners decided that Sheen should no longer be honorary mayor. Law enforcement had many opportunities to stop Nicholas Cruz before he shot up the Florida school. They failed repeatedly. That should be the subject we talk about, not some liberal cry to ban guns. If law enforcement cannot protect you, who will unless you do it yourself? The hypocrisy of the left has never been greater than when they demanded an answer as to why God did not interfere in the Parkland school shooting. These same liberals had worked long and worked hard to drive God out of our schools and to ban him from returning. When the shooting began, God was not in the school, having been banned by the far left. Yet they questioned why God was not there. If that isn't mental illness, what is it? When liberals demand that guns be banned lest someone be shot, remember Timothy McVeigh killed hundreds of people with a fertilizer mixture. Jim Jones killed 918 people with Kool-Aid. The Zarnoff brothers wreaked havoc on the Boston Marathon with a bomb in a bucket. Knife attacks have become more prevalent. And don't forget the killings of innocents by drivers of vehicles who deliberately run them down. If we banned and confiscated all guns tomorrow, the killing would not stop. They would simply come at the hands of alternate weapons. It has been said that our problem is not guns, but people, and that's true. I hunted with a 16-gauge shotgun from the age of 10, but I had been taught gun safety and responsibility. Young people today, with few exceptions, have been warned away from God. They have never experienced the pain that those of our generation have experienced. We tried to give them a better life, and in so doing, we went overboard. They feel entitled to whatever they want. We covered for their mistakes, and that left them irresponsible. They march with crude posters and demand that someone else do something about mass shootings, without a clue as to what must be done. Negatives echo much louder than positives, and liberals love to shout negatively. We know that something must be done about gun violence. The question is what? Foolish demands to ban guns show ignorance. If somebody wants to kill you badly enough, keeping a gun from them will not stop them. We see that all across the world where Islamic extremists strap explosives on themselves and blow themselves up among crowds. No guns involved. Hundreds dead. Rational thought among liberals is like trying to nail jello to a tree. It never sticks. What never changes these days is the fake news we receive from the major networks, MSNBC, CNN, and papers like the New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, News and Observer, and others. These so-called journalists have shown repeatedly that we can no longer trust them. Whether we are Democrats or Republicans, men or women, black, white, brown, red, or yellow, we should all agree that no country can long endure divided against itself. If we win our arguments but lose our freedom, what have we gained? Partisan politics will lead to the destruction of America. I call your attention to the fake news media and their partisan slanted news. Anyone who watches the Washington Press Corps in the daily White House briefings can see clearly the bias of the reporters. They are like excited monkeys on a banana tree. I have long advocated that this media circus not be televised. Take away their cameras, and perhaps they will be more serious with their questions. Among the worst of these partisan hacks are Jim Acosta, Major Garrett, Cecilia Vega, and Jonathan Carl. And you can add Shepard Smith to that list of Trump haters. On February 22, in the White House press briefing, Jonathan Carl kept asking if it made sense to arm all of the country's 700,000 teachers. Nobody had suggested arming all teachers. His questions were aimed at his hate for Trump and were based on untruth. While MSNBC is totally biased and considered a joke, CNN has to be the worst excuse for broadcasting. On February 22nd, CNN arranged for another of their town hall forums, this time taking advantage of young students who were too naive to realize that CNN was using them and their grief for partisan politics. Urged on by fake news, CNN, what could have been an opportunity to discuss ideas to stop school violence, became a forum for unruly students to heckle and name-call participants they disagreed with. Their plan did not go unnoticed, because one of the survivors of the Florida school shooting came forward to tell how a CNN producer gave him a scripted question and told him to stick to the script. It was not his words they wanted, but the scripted words of a fake news network playing politics. The young man refused to participate in this fraud on the American people. He also explained how other students did follow CNN's scripts with questions designed to embarrass conservatives and Republicans. Some listeners have asked me who they can trust. Some of them watch CNN. But I can tell you that CNN is not to be trusted. They are liberal to the core, and they do not follow the rules of honest news reporting in their quest to damage a president that they hate. If you watch CNN, you are enabling their volume of fake news. Now, on to my message about gun violence. It was interesting to hear liberal Democrats who worked feverishly to keep God or any mention of God out of our schools ask where God was during the shooting. That's liberal logic. As we search for the best way to bring safety and security to our schools, we must not discard any ideas until proven sound or unsound. What President Trump has discussed is the idea of arming certain individuals on school campuses who are adept at gun safety. He suggested the idea that certain teachers, coaches, or administrators be given ongoing training in the use and safety of guns, and that they be given extra pay to help provide for that school safety. That's common sense. If a coach in Parkland, Florida, had been armed, he could have saved lives by confronting an armed attacker. As it was, this brave man could only confront the shooter by shielding students with his body. And for that, he lost his life. Nobody has suggested that all teachers be armed in school. The same liberal thinkers who establish gun-free zones are the one attacking the president for even considering the armed security option. How did that gun-free zone work out for us? About as well as when the far-left actor Martin Sheen declared a nuclear zone in California. The innocent remain unarmed, while the terrorists see these zones as a wide-open opportunity to kill unarmed people. Notice that the blame for the Florida school shooting has been placed on Donald Trump after a year in office. Liberals and fake news artists did not blame Barack Obama for the Sandy Hook shooting, although he had been in office long enough to have actually pushed through gun safety measures. That's what I mean when I talk about partisan politics. Donald Trump inherited this mess. For decades, lawmakers, Democrat and Republican, have given lip service to this school safety issue, but have done nothing about it. Suddenly, they demand that Trump supply all of the answers instantly for a problem that has plagued America for decades. That's not only unfair, it's dishonest. The nation of Israel has no gun violence in their schools because they have armed personnel on the campus. This small, beleaguered state surrounded by Islamic countries that wish to destroy them long ago wised up to the fact that they had to take matters into their own hands to protect themselves and their children. That's also why they built a wall between them and the Islamists who were sneaking into their country and killing innocent civilians, including Israeli children. That wall has shut down all but a rare incident of violence against the Jewish state. Remember, liberal Democrats are dead set against a wall between the United States and Mexico, which is designed to stop illegal immigration and drug traffic coming across the border. Mexico doesn't want the wall because they get millions of dollars in cash from illegals in the United States who send that money back to their families in Mexico. The Mexican economy would be profoundly damaged if a wall prevented immigrants, illegal immigrants from Mexico, to enter into the United States. Mexican hypocrisy is on full display when they whine about America building a wall to keep undesirables out. They built their own wall between them and Latin American countries, which they wanted to keep out of Mexico. Now, partisan politics has no place in the discussion of the safety of America's children. I was never a member of the National Rifle Association until late 2017. I joined because I observed liberal America trying to take the only security we have against criminals and terrorists away from us. Today, it's the ban of AR-15 rifles. But once they accomplish that, they will move on to the next category of guns. Their ultimate aim is to strip away the Second Amendment. Now, having said that, I believe that the NRA should be a bit more flexible in things like background checks, gun show loopholes, and the like. I do understand why they are reluctant to give an inch, because they know that giving liberal America one inch means they take a mile. The NRA has supported conservative Republicans because liberal Democrats are hell-bent on getting the guns out of our hands. Given that, Democrats and the fake news media make the NRA and guns out to be the problem. We do have a problem, a serious problem, but it is not guns, it is people. If I am intent on killing people, you can keep an AR-15 out of my reach and I'll find another way to kill. It might be a knife, a speeding vehicle, a bomb strapped around my waist, or something as simple as a well-thrown rock. In China recently, 22 people were killed with a knife at a train station. With a knife! No AR-15 was involved. Now, I have no problem with strict background checks. I don't think you can be strict enough. Move the age to buy a rifle from 18 to 21, and I can agree. Any other rational ideas for safety will be met with interest by my ears, but to think that banning guns or declaring gun-free zones will stop the school violence is reckless and irrational. We should welcome the interest of teenagers who have taken a serious position on improving school safety. This is a movement that could be positive as we seek answers. That is, if the liberal Democrats and their fake news allies stop trying to program these young people with scripts to follow. Having said that, it is time for these young people to understand why they themselves have been part of the problem. For too long, bullies in our schools have been able to terrorize the weaker students, while those watching the bullying either walk away or watch in silence and never report it. It has been established that school bullying has been a big reason for school shootings. It is sanctimonious for these young people to pretend that they are not part of the issue. We were all in school at one time or the other, and we know that it is the students themselves who know better than the officials who the troublemakers are, who the mentally disturbed are, who the walking time bombs are. And yet, very few of them step forward to warn of impending danger. They created an atmosphere at school where being a snitch can bring condemnation down upon you. That's also, by the way, a culture that has spread to our neighborhoods, especially in America's urban cities. There, thugs are allowed to roam free, to terrorize innocent people, sell their drugs openly on the streets, and enforce their own street justice. And those victims are supposed to remain silent rather than be labeled a tattletale or a snitch. Police have long recognized that it is accepted in urban communities that you do not cooperate with the police. Even if you witness a crime, you're required to say you saw nothing. While that has been destroying communities, it is still the norm today. It is good that young students are coming together to demand answers as to school safety, but at the same time, they have to recognize their own part in creating the climate of silence that allows these shootings to continue. An article in the New Yorker offered the suggestion that improvements in the mental health system could have prevented the Florida school violence. When mass shootings strike, speculations about their mental health, sometimes borne out, other times not, are never far behind. It does seem intuitive that someone could do something terrible like that. They must be, in some sense, insane. But is that true? Are gun violence and mental illness really so tightly intertwined? Jeffrey Swanson, a medical sociologist and professor of psychiatry at Duke University, became interested in that question. 80% of the population believes that mental illness is at least partially to blame for such incidents. That belief has shaped our politics. The 1968 Gun Control Act prohibited anyone who had ever been committed to a mental hospital or adjudicated as a mental defective from purchasing firearms. That prohibition was reaffirmed in 1993 by the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. It has only become more strictly enforced in the intervening years with the passing of a National Instant Criminal Background Check System Improvement Act in 2008, as well as statewide initiatives. In 2013, New York passed the SAFE Act, which mandated that mental health professionals file reports on patients that are likely to engage in conduct that would result in harm to themselves or others. Those patients, who now number more than 30,000, have had their guns seized and have been prevented from buying new ones. The question is, are those policies based on sound science? For that answer, we look at studies that have been done. One study of more than 10,000 individuals, both mentally ill and healthy, found that serious mental illness alone was indeed a risk factor for violence, from minor incidents like shoving to armed assault. In only 4% of cases, that is, if you took all of the incidents of violence reported among the people in the survey, mental illness alone could explain only 4% of those incidents. When the study was broken down by demographics, it was found that the occurrence of violence was more closely associated with whether someone was male, poor, and abusing either alcohol or drugs, and that those three factors alone could predict violent behavior with or without any sign of mental illness. If someone fits all three of those categories, the likelihood of them committing a violent act was high, even if they were not mentally ill. If somebody fits none of the three, then mental illness was highly unlikely to be predictive of violence. That study debunked two major myths. One, people with mental illness are all dangerous. Not so. The vast majority are not dangerous. And the second myth, that there's no connection at all. There is one. It's quite small, but it's not completely non-existent. Taking a non-random sample of 27 mass murders that took place between 1958 and 1999, J. Reed Malloy, a psychiatrist at the University of California, in San Diego, found that the perpetrators, all of whom were adolescent men, were likely to be loners, as well as to abuse alcohol and drugs. Close to half of them had been bullied in the past, and close to half had a history of violence. 23% also had a history of mental illness, but only two of them were exhibiting psychotic symptoms at the time of violence. When you accounted for the other factors, mental illness added little predictive value. In all of the studies, there was one recurring factor. Past violence remains the single biggest predictor of future violence. In other words, any history of violent behavior is a much stronger predictor of future violence than a mental health diagnosis. There were many red flags that, if followed, could have saved the lives of those Florida students. Authorities had been called to the crew's home in Montana more than 20 times to address concerns about Nicholas Cruz. His torture of animals alone should have been a precursor to violence against human beings. He was known to be a ticking bomb. That leads to the idea that gun prohibitions wouldn't be based on mental health so much as on records of violent behavior, not just felonies, but also regarding minor disputes. We know that there are a lot of people out there, the professor said, carrying guns around who have high levels of trait anger, the type who break and smash things. He doesn't believe they should have guns, and I agree. That's what's behind the idea of restricting firearms with people with misdemeanor violent crime convictions or temporary domestic violence restraining orders or even multiple DUIs. Mental illness, you see, is easy to blame. It's easy to pinpoint and easy to legislate against in regards to gun ownership. But that does not mean that it is the right place to start in an attempt to curtail violence. The factors responsible for mass violence are messy, complex, and dynamic. And that is a far harder sell to legislators and voters alike. Now, I'm a white male, and I have never killed or harmed anyone else with a gun or any other weapon. Still, I have to admit that mass killers are almost always white males. 54% of mass murders are committed by white males. Black males are second, but they're only 16% of mass shootings. Of course, 63% of the population is white and only 13% black, so those figures don't tell the whole picture. Clearly, 98% of mass shootings and 90% of all murders are at the hands of men, black or white. There are no absolute certainties when it comes to mass killers, but a few things come close. Someone will use the term disaffected youth to describe the shooter. Somewhere there will be a diary, either tweets, blogs, YouTube videos, or scrawled writings on a lined notebook. And the murderer will, with more than 98% certainty, be male. There is no shortage of explanations for the overwhelming maleness of the monster population. We know that testosterone fuels aggression. Boys take longer to mature than girls. In the case of males who are already tripwired for aggression, that provides a lot of years to behave badly. There are, too, the social factors. Video games that are so violent, a culture of physical aggression, and the general tendency of all societies to turn men into hunters and warriors, putting those jobs off limits to women, or at least making them optional. But there is more, and a lot of it has to do with status. Males, for better or worse, are ferociously protective of their position in any tribe, community, or society, and any threat to that position goes to the core of their identity and their self-esteem. It's a common observation in times of recession that while loss of a job is miserable for both genders, it's the males who are likelier to become completely undone by it. Without the role of worker and money earner, men feel hollowed out and too often call for revenge. It's not for nothing that the victims in workplace shootings are often managers who just the month before had demoted or fired the shooter. Some research supports the idea that males are more likely than females to develop negative attributions of blame that are external in nature. That is, the cause of my problems is somebody else and some force outside of me. And that translates into anger and hostility toward others. Whatever the reasons, society must address the fact that males are to blame for almost all mass shootings. Finally, let's look at ways to prevent mass killings in our schools. First and foremost, we must invite God back into our schools. We must have parents who can resist trying to be their kid's best friend and do what parents should do, teach and use discipline in that teaching. All of my life, I have been mindful of what God expects from me, and that has provided a rudder in my daily life. Due to liberal fantasy and political correctness, that rudder has been taken from our children's lives. Next, I submit that we have teachers in our system who are fully capable of being trained in the use of guns to protect our children. Does anybody doubt that 30% or more of teachers have a gun in their home to protect themselves? Some of them are avid hunters. Not all teachers, of course, but those who volunteer for training and who want extra pay for the trouble. But that's not enough. I was recently in the Goldsboro courthouse to file some papers, and I had to enter through and have identification through a metal detector. Are our school children not as deserving of that security as the courthouse? Now, ideally, security experts say all schools should have a man trap. That's a set of outer doors that lead to a vestibule with a screening point and a set of inner doors beyond which visitors cannot go unless they have been vetted. Doors should remain locked. Safety drills should take place without warning, and parents should be informed of where they should collect their kids in an emergency. All schools should have reinforced plate glass and access control, a term experts use to refer to limited entry. You can't have 9 different ways to get into the school. You can't protect that much. Even if school officials find a security strategy that they feel is effective, they face one remaining hurdle: parents. In one rural county, a superintendent has been trying for more than a year to get approval for every visitor to be individually buzzed in. Parents haven't wanted it because they say it's creating a prison-like environment. It is time to jettison that kind of thinking if we are to make our children safe at school. We can make our schools secure. The commitment has not been there. But in the wake of these mass shootings like Parkland, Florida, the demand for security has moved to the front of the line. Anybody who uses these tragedies for political gain must be called out. I'm a conservative, and you might be a Democrat, but your child's life is as important to me as mine. If we all feel that way and speak up, these mass shootings can and will be a distant memory. Carl, I don't have the ability to listen to you on Skype today, so I can't take and respond to any comments. But I will say that I hope our listeners listened carefully to what I had to say, not just demand that something be done by somebody. We have to be that somebody. And God bless America.